Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I'm back. Forbidden America Radio is back on the air. 30-minute format. Pretty much just a monologue right now, because it's we haven't gotten everything cranked back up yet. I got a whole long list of guests that I can call upon that are riveting, that I will be calling upon, and I'm still deciding on where to put the show. I'm not entirely convinced that Blog Talk Radio is the place to be, but for now, it'll have to do. And I've had some suggestions sent in to me as to what I should be covering right now. And I've listened to all of them, and I will be covering all of it. And I'll be doing that over the next 2, 3, or 4 episodes. And the reason why I'm doing it that way is so that I can give it adequate depth to the coverage that it needs. I can't just gloss over everything in 30 minutes and call it good, because it's more in-depth than that. The old show, this program in its old format, was 2 hours. And it was 2 hours because it took 2 hours to do a decent interview with whomever, whether it be world-renowned climatologists or anti-war activists or people protesting the effects of American foreign policy, some of whom were ex-service members who love the U.S. but don't like some of the stuff we do abroad, and the reasons for why we do those things. And, you know, it's very few outlets for that voice, so I gave that voice. And so I was off the air and I wasn't doing this. If you go to the Blog Talk Radio page for this show, and it's been posted on Facebook, so you can find it. And you see all the different shows that I did at the time. I had the website was up and I was doing the radio shows. And for a time I even dabbled around with video, which we may still do. I haven't decided. And you see that the long-form interviews were, you know, they were hard-hitting sometimes. And I even got reports that there were people in airports, like at O'Hare in Chicago, handing out CDs of the recording of this program, because whoever made those recordings was so charged up by the fact that information was being broadcast that they felt they had to give it away, and they were giving away CDs. And it got back to me that that was my program that was being given away. So I found that to be quite interesting. And there was a period under the previous administration where there was active monitoring done of the show to include personal contact. And I found it very interesting that three of the key points when we monitored the packet traffic, three of the key consistent points of monitoring the show, actually four, but the top three were Rome, Italy, and McLean, Virginia, Washington, D.C., and also Beijing. Oh, that tells me a lot, because that's the Vatican, right? That's China. That's the Americans. And it's McLean is the home of the Cray supercomputer cluster that governs the Internet. The Internet was invented and based and is still based there. Everything goes back there. If you're on the internet anywhere in the world, you are getting the internet. The superhighway is connecting to you from McLean, Virginia. That's how it works. That's how it's set up. And one of the reasons that you can trace that back is because the domain systems were set up. You know, if you wanted to go to forbiddenamerica.com, well, then go ahead. But for the longest time, anybody that wasn't in the United States had to go forbiddenamerica.com NZ for New Zealand, .co for country, you know, and so forth. They couldn't just have a .com. Not so much that same way now because of the way that the system has been changed. But initially, and you can still see it on a lot of website addresses, that was why, because the Americans owned it and didn't want to give that up. So anyway, I felt that it was urgent that I get back onto the show because of all the things that are going on. You know, it was, I'll tell you the reason I came on is because I'm fucking sick and tired of all the shit that we have to slog through day to day. You can't get on the internet anymore. You can't turn on the news anymore. You can't. It's just, I was a kid in the 60s, and I saw in my face, I saw, you know, racial upheaval. I saw, you know, civil unrest. I saw protesting and violence and discord, and people, you know, were really polarized. You either, you know, were one type of person that you love this country or that's it or just go away. And the other people that were like, we do love the country, but not in the shape it's in. And we don't want to see any more of our people dead for what we think is a bullshit reason. Well, that description that's today. Nothing's changed. But for a long time, we didn't have it coming to a head. We have it coming to a head now. A couple of things that were epiphanies for me. I'm an older white guy, so I enjoy lots of privilege. And by that, in case you really still haven't dialed into that yet, it means I can go to the store and not be bothered because I'm invisible. But if you go to the store and you're not white, or you go to the store and you're not male, you know, all bets are off. You don't know that you're going to get there and get back without being harassed. That's the law of the jungle in the way our society is geared right now. And you know, teaching women to keep their keys in their hands while they get to their car, and to look out for this and look out for that because of predators. How many people are teaching young boys, you know, don't be a fucking predator? I mean, seriously, you're teaching women how not to get raped instead of teaching, you know, these young boys and these young men to not rape, to feel compassion. My daughter, who is 17, wanted to watch a documentary about the Rodney King situation, which was, what, 1992. So we did. And, you know, I remember it vividly. My ex-co-host was there. He was in L.A. on a rooftop with the sandbags, you know, trying to ride out the storm. So this was very much in my history. You know, I experienced this not directly because I wasn't in L.A., but this is part of my, you know, my awareness. And I grew up in a multicultural, multi-ethnic neighborhood, which was unique. I didn't have any racial animosity toward anybody, and I didn't look at their differences as weird or foreign or scary. I was a little kid. I was like, you know, that kid's black, that kid's yellow. I mean, I don't give a shit. It's just, you know, when you're taught that's normal, then that's normal. So it was very shocking to me when I would see people exhibit racism toward the people that were my neighbors and my friends. Like, what is that guy's problem? It didn't make sense to me at all. And so when we were looking at this documentary about Rodney King and what happened in L.A., they talked about what happened in 65 and the Watts riots. And then they talked about, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger was making a movie in L.A., you know, the Terminator movies, right across the street from where they were shooting was what Rodney King got pulled over and was beat with those three guys with clubs. And the reason there's video is because those people were there working. And otherwise, there wouldn't be any video. It was 92. People didn't carry cell phones with cameras yet. It wasn't a thing yet. Not like it is now. And so we got video of this. And then, of course, they didn't get convicted of anything. Well, they did get convicted of one thing, but it was, they basically got told, go home. Just go home. So there was no justice. And everybody saw this unfold. And it was like, whoa, wait a minute. We got these guys dead to rights. They're on video. We have the radio traffic where the police are talking about, you know, the black suspects using the N-word on the radio. And these guys went to trial and got off scot-free. Nothing happened to them. And that's what sparked the riots in 92. And people that look at the riots and say, well, that isn't how you affect change. That's just a temper tantrum. And there were almost 1,000 fires in LA. Almost 1,000 of them. The fire department just said, screw it, we can't, what are we supposed to do? We can't get to them. First of all, they were being shot at. Second of all, there were too many to do anything about. The police felt the same way, and they just basically fell back to what they felt was like a DMZ. And just, you know, if you were on the wrong side of that DMZ, you're screwed. And that's basically what went down. And it lasted for a long time. And everybody was like, well, this is bullshit. I mean, these people are destroying their own city. You know, this is criminal this, criminal that. You know what? It is. It is. Looting and rioting and all that, that's wrong. They know it. You know it. I know it. We all know it. But why do they do it? Just because they're being opportunists? No. Because they'd lost complete faith in the system. There was no system. And the system that existed in place of what they were told was supposed to exist existed to predate upon them. They were prey. They were cattle. And as long as they weren't staying within the mold that they were expected to stay in, then things would go badly. They were horribly abused by the law enforcement community. Not all the members. I'm not against the police. I used to wear a badge. I get it. But you cannot deny that there's an element of aggression and xenophobia and all this stuff that, you know, people do get mistreated, especially along racial lines. And this is, you know, that had been done for so many decades. It was like, that's just how it is. They couldn't take it anymore. And they lost it. People died. People lost their businesses. You know, this broke apart. And the reason that that happened was because they didn't know what else to do, because the normal channels weren't working. The appeals to the system were falling on deaf ears. They were basically hemmed in. And they said, you know what? I know one thing that they can't ignore. And then here we go. And it blew apart. And I don't know if you know anything about, if you're not old enough, look it up. Look at the videos. Reginald Denny being pulled out of his truck just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and beaten unconscious. Beaten almost to death. And, you know, got beaten so bad that he lost the use of one eye. He lost a kidney. He was basically dead. And he hadn't done anything to anybody. But the rage was so blind that they didn't care. If you were in the way, you're going. And if you weren't black, they attacked Mexicans, they attacked Asians, and they attacked white people. They attacked, you know, insanity. Well, the system failed. It didn't fail because that happened. It failed because it made that happen. It made that It wasn't set up to be fair and equal. Nothing about it was fair at all. And the other epiphanies that I've been having is, you know, what non-white people, starting with the native people here, and there were several nations of people that lived here, and some of them are still here. And we wiped out almost 150 million of those people, who are the only people that are native to here, the only people who are descendant of actual Americans. And to this day, they are insulted and derided and sneered at and seen as stupid or lazy or drunks or whatever. And they're not deserving of that. There's no reason for them to be treated that way. But that racism still lives on. You know, when I was a little kid, I grew up playing cowboys and Indians. And what was the objective of the game? Cowboys have pistols. So what do you do with the Indians? Well, you shoot them. I mean, it was on the Saturday morning cartoons. I mean, that's how we grew up. Like, yeah, we're the white people. We're taking over. You have John Wayne, who in real life said that black people in America shouldn't be given any control over anything financial until they can show responsibility, and they haven't done that. That they're basically like children, and that American white people have to control the country and control them. That he said that. And he was, you know, hey, John Wayne, and everybody that knew him and knew of him and the Hollywood that he worked in, they were all like that. I can remember, you know, being raised as a kid, and none of the people that I lived that were the adults in my life, you know, the extended family, would ever cast a racial slur at anyone or do any of those things, or maybe not even discriminate. But they thought racistly. They thought in terms of, you know, them darkies and Chinamen and, you know, all those. The talking shit about the inferior races was very real. I grew up in an Irish, white, working class Irish household. And, you know, two things you can find in ample supply in an Irish household are alcohol and talking shit. And my dad, who wasn't racist, he didn't act racist. He invited our neighbors in and said, hey, we're going to have lobster. Come on over and, you know, why don't you sit down? And he liked all his neighbors, as did I, as do we all. But when he would sit in private with his white buddies from the job or his relatives, whatever, they would still talk shit about these non-white groups. So it was a thing. Like, it still existed. And I still remember that, how they weren't being malicious, but that they, like the people before them and the people before them, didn't see that the maliciousness lay in the insensitivity, that it was just there, and that they weren't taking these other people seriously, who may be smarter than them, who may be more talented than them, who whatever, in some cases, because people are just people. But if you're not white, then you're automatically discounted because, no, that's not going to happen. And there it is. I mean, and that's the America that I grew up in. Now, do I think America's horrible? I don't. I think it's great. I think it's the land of where anything can happen. If you can make it happen, it can happen. But we have a problem that we've always had since the day we got here, that we brought with us. And we have to admit that. We have to. You got to admit. You have to be able to say, and this is a key phrase that I came up with, and I found out that other people have come up with a very similar phrase. It means the same thing. And that is that I'm not guilty of any of this. When white people say, oh, I'm not racist, well, you know, and that's a red flag for people. But I'm not guilty of any of these racist things. And yet, I'm responsible. Because there's a big difference between being guilty of something and being responsible for it. If you're in a military unit and you have 50 guys, and two of those guys commit war crimes, horrible things that are going above and beyond the pale, they've done things to people that were not called for, they committed war crimes. You, as their commander, are not guilty of those things. Nobody gave them an order to do that. They just went and did it. But they're your men. So you're responsible. You are responsible, and you will deal with this, or other people are going to deal with you. It's kind of like that. As an American and as a white person, all these things have happened to these other Americans and people that want to be Americans. And I'm not guilty of all the things, the horrible things that have happened to them, or the disappointing failures that have befallen them because of the fact that they're not white. You know, the denied opportunities and so forth. I'm not guilty of that. You're probably not guilty of that, but damn it, we're responsible. And it's up to us to step up and go, all right, so how do we fix this? And it does include acquiescing. How do we give to this situation so that it blossoms into something beneficial? These people aren't coming here to, in the immigrant situation, they're not coming here to take away from us. They're coming here to contribute. They're coming here primarily because they're running for their lives. The vast majority of the people at the southern border, aside from people from across the ocean, which are now coming as well and have for some time, they're not Mexicans. They're Central Americans. And Central Americans live in the four or five countries that we have with our industry and our businesses, with the blessing of the U.S. government, and in some cases with the involvement of the U.S. government, have decimated. So now they have these vacuums where we've ridden roughshod over these areas in terms of, you know, raping and pillaging, in terms of getting the natural resources and manipulating the local politics so that we can get advantages in business and so forth. And then having no EPA to worry about, just polluting the ever-loving shit out of everything. So now the ecosystem is damaged. The water is in question in terms of its drinkability. There's pollution like you have never seen. So while you can go to the tourist areas and go, this is beautiful. Yeah, here. But you can't live here. Go down the road about 10 miles. Tell me if you still think it's beautiful. And the only people that are in charge down there are drug lords, war lords, and banana republics, all of whom are basically the same thing, just different clothing and different weapons. And, you know, when they're telling you that I'm going to keep your children and you're going to run drugs for me, or I'm going to kill them and let my men rape your 8-year-old daughter and your son, the type of shit, that's what's happening to some of these people. Everyone else that comes aware of that is like, fuck this, I'm out. And they start walking north. They're people like you and me. They just happen to speak Spanish. These aren't like people squatting on a dirt floor somewhere. These are people in normal situations that their American dream, their Central American dream that they were working toward, has been destroyed by unscrupulous business people and a compliant military element that has enforced the will of those unscrupulous business types. And so these people have been marginalized and pushed to the edge, and they're fodder now for opportunists with AK-47s. So they just say, fuck it. They grab their kids and they start walking. That's how desperate they are. They know it's 2,200 miles. You know, they know it's 3,000 kilometers. But guess what? They don't have any other option. They can't stop because none of the countries on the way will let them stay, including Mexico. They got to keep moving. And they get to the border here, knowing that it's not going to be a joyride, but it's better than being shot at or being beheaded or being, you know, watching your children die or being sold into prostitution or whatever it is that's going to happen to them, and does happen to them. And that's why they're doing what they're doing. So when they ask for asylum, that, you know, we have to put them up somewhere by the border till we figure out what to do with them. And now, in fairness, you know, to Customs and Border Patrol, that's a huge problem, and they're ill-equipped to deal with it. which isn't their fault. So if we were to equip those divisions and we were to bolster their numbers, there would be less likelihood of them saying screw it and becoming racist assholes because of the frustrations of the job, that there's nothing good we can do, so let's just, you know, we're just going to be bitter about this and just, you know, just mistreat everybody, which is basically what's going on. And if we helped them more, we'd have a better handle on this, but no one's helping them. It's all lip service and bullshit, just like usual. And not because it's a Republican administration. They did this under the Democratic administrations too. This isn't a political issue. It's a political football. But it all comes down to the America that I love and that I defend, to me, has always been the one that had the capacity to be compassionate. The best national security that we can have is a well-fed, well-cared-for, healthy, educated, you know, proletariat. We need people to be well-cared for. There's your security, that are educated, because now we can compete on any level, scientifically, economically, you know, innovations, militarily. And the amount of pork barrel money that gets spent, pork barrel meaning, you know, somebody's signing a contract and getting fat cat rich on something we don't really need, but the millions upon millions upon millions of dollars have now been spent, and because of the contract, they got to honor it. And that's why our budget is so huge. And they're victims of, if we reduce our budget, we're not going to get those kinds of funds anymore. Well, that's what reducing your budget means. It's ridiculously huge, including the black ops portion of it. If we reduce that amount for another fucking cruise missile and another this and that, that we don't need, we have arsenals like you've never seen, you wouldn't even believe it, and put those into the social programs, and here's the liberal talk coming out, then those needs would be met. Everybody, conservatives and their children, would be taken care of, as well as the liberals and their children. Everybody, all the old people, all of the infirm, all of the children in schools. We wouldn't be swimming in this bullshit of everybody's my potential enemy, I'm going to get mine, and oh, by the way, I have a combat rifle, and I'll defend my property if I have to. That's not the mindset that's going to get us anywhere. We might as well go live in Mogadishu, Somalia, because that's how they live. Because they're living in that type of vacuum where the warlords took over. And if you don't have those weapons, you're screwed. Is that the America you want? It's where it's headed. That's not what we want. It's not how we're going to fix any of this. So again, see, 30 minutes just flew by. It's a minute and a half left. So the show is back, and I promise I will get to those subjects that you've asked for in depth. I'm going to look for a new venue. I'm going to look for a new venue that will allow me to do a two-hour show and bring people on as guests, so that you can hear what they have to say about these situations. And I really hope that you continue to listen to the show. And here's the kicker. Tell people about the damn show. Share it. Tell them about it. Because, you know, that's what keeps it alive. And if, you know, if it's forbidden America, then let's talk about it. That's why it's called Forbidden America. Because we will talk about that shit, even if it makes people uncomfortable or pisses them off. I don't care. Go ahead. Be pissed off. So that's the show. I'm going to sign off. And this will archive. It turns into a podcast, and you can tell people about it and maybe send them the link. That would be great. I'll talk to you soon. And if you need to talk about something specific, let me know, and I'll bring it up. Okay. For Forbidden America, this is Steve. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.